it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome to week 41 of the Foot Weekly podcast. This is a gameplay episode. We've got a bit of a mentality focus on this one, which I'm looking forward to. And someone whose mentality is, you know, almost always in the right place, I'd say. It's Ed Japes. Welcome back.
Oh, hello, Ben. I appreciate that. What a compliment. If you could say anything about a FIFA player, it's like he's got the right mental attitude all the time, which you don't get to see me play foot champs on a regular basis. So I'm going to let that illusion live on.
I'm basing this on streams where maybe you'd be more willing to keep your composure than when you're off stream. I don't
know. You know what? I will say it. In my old age, I've become more like my frustration with the game amounts to me saying, you got to be kidding me.
And that's about it. Okay. Yeah.
And that's like it these days. I'm a mentality monster, Ben. Now, if only my quick twitch abilities had stayed where they were.
Yeah. And our next guest probably not got the best quick twitch abilities after the week he's had.
Wow.
It is Josh Excels, and he's been at Glastonbury over the last week or so. Welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm... In terms of mentality, I'm just very chilled now, you know, just like relaxed and I'm playing. And I'll be honest, I feel like the Glastonbury vitamins don't seem to have worn off because I've come back to a game I barely recognize with goalkeepers playing center back and what the hell's going on?
What's Glastonbury?
Okay, yeah. For an international audience that doesn't know Glastonbury, it's one of the biggest music festivals in the world. It's been going since the 70s. It's in like the field of Avalon that's got links to Arthurian legend, and it's, you know, was traditionally an incredibly kind of hippie festival, but is now quite commercialized, and about 250,000 people go every year. And it, you know, this year the headliners were Arctic Monkeys, Guns N' Roses, and then Elton John's final UK show. And, you know, Lizzo and Lana Del Rey were there as well, but, you know, they weren't headliners.
I just have a hard time convincing myself of the idea about going to festivals when I just haven't heard of any of the artists.
Wait, what?
Well, I will say one of my personal highlights was Cat Stevens, who you probably, you know, you might not have heard of either, but...
I've heard of all of them. I'm just like joking. Those are obviously like massive names in the entertainment industry, right up there with Air Japes.
Well, after that slightly rambling start, we should get into it. And our next guest, I know, will be providing some interesting insights based on what he's shared elsewhere on social media and things like that. It is pro coach Jeppe. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much for having me on.
It's great to have you on. And one thing I've noticed on your social media is you're certainly a coach's coach. A lot of coaches seem to be getting advice from yourself, which is great to see. And it did occur to me, although we've had plenty of coaches on before, we probably haven't asked specifically what it is that coaches do in the FIFA scene. People probably know that they sort of sit behind pro players when they're at competitions and give them advice. But beyond that, what does it actually involve?
That's a really good question. I think we can divide it into multiple parts. So I coach the Finnish national team. So that's mainly E-Nations and 2v2. And what I do there is helping them prepare, really, having a look at their games, see what can they improve. Should we change something in the strategy? Should we change the formation? Should we try different combinations and so on? And then also do the 1v1 coaching, both for professional players and also more casual players. So it also depends on which level we're talking.
And you mentioned the Finnish national team. You are Danish, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, you are Danish, yeah. And do you speak Finnish then? Or do you do it in English?
Yeah, we do it in English. Like,
okay, right.
I tried to use the Duolingo app and practice Finnish, but I quickly gave up. That's way too hard for me. So we'll just keep it to English.
Yeah. And actually talking of, thank you very much for coming on this podcast. I know it's your first podcast in English you've done, and I know that can't be easy, so appreciate you doing it. Let's move on to a little introductory topic for you, and that is really any foot player that you want to highlight. Maybe they've been good for you, good for pros, you know, something along those lines.
The first player I think of is the new Milinkovic-Savic card.
Probably
a card people don't enjoy playing against, but it's probably not a secret that we finish people like to cross a lot, or I say we Finnish people, I'm a Dane, but the Finnish team likes to cross a lot. And yeah, he's pretty tall and he's a solid player in the air. So I really enjoy playing with him. Also, it's a pretty unique card. It's a fairly new card, so we haven't really seen him in the competitive scene yet. Mm.
But in saying that, he could score the winning goal at the upcoming grand finals, World Cup, etc.
He could. And the thing about him is he's quite versatile. So you could play him as a centre-back. You could also play him as a CM. And yeah, just to have some fun, I actually played him as a striker this week, just to test out his deborers. And it gives me a bit of Haaland vibes, actually, when he does the set of deborers, because he's quite physical too, pretty fast.
He's 5-star skills, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. A bit clunky, but it works.
Yeah, and actually, we should steer away from this, considering we spent most of this week's content podcast talking about goalkeepers outfield, the controversy around that, and a bit of a debate. So if you'd like to hear that, then do listen to that supporter episode. It is available to supporters. This week it's the content pod on the supporter feed, but next week it will be gameplay. Just search Support Foot Weekly. And if you are supporting, obviously a huge thank you as always for doing so. Let's chat tactics then. Interested to hear from you, Jeppe. What is your favorite tactic from this cycle so far?
Let's say favorite being most enjoyable, giving you the warm and fuzzies, and then the one that's the most effective.
I would say the most effective one is... It's hard to say, and I don't really like to say it, but it is the 5-4-1. But the formation I enjoy the most personally, when I play myself, it's the 4-2-3-1, which is a pretty old school formation, and it brings me back to the kind of old way of playing FIFA, where it wasn't as mechanical as it is now, and it was more like real football, you could say. But it depends on also, do I want to just try certain things out, or do I really want to score a lot of goals? If I want to score more goals, I go for the 3-4-2-1 or the 4-3-2-1, because I think it's easier to do quick transitions from the defense to the attack.
And actually, 4-2-3-1 is obviously not something you see people playing so often. People tend to go for the more meta approaches.
Yeah.
Do you think, as someone who's coached at both ends of the ability spectrum, should we say, that there is a risk with people using pro tactics specifically?
That's a good question, because a lot of players just try to copy tactics from YouTube, and it doesn't really work like that. For sure, you could improve your game if you find the right tactics, but if you don't really have an understanding of why are these instructions set this way, or why is it exactly, let's say, 71 on depth, because you can use the auto offside trap, then it's not really going to benefit you in the end. So it's okay to take some inspiration from the pole players, but you also need to have the basic understanding of why is this formation working and when do you need to use this formation. So for the 4-2-3-1, I'd say you are probably a player who play more slow, more patient, trying to build up the attack, trying to maybe kill some time. But it doesn't really fit the players that likes quick transitions and fast attacking and the counter-attacks. They're probably playing the 4-3-2-1 instead.
I just want to ask, in terms of formations, obviously there's the meta, only you'll have to forgive my slight ignorance towards co-op competitions, like two-player competitions. Is there a difference in the meta between the single-player competitions and a co-op competition, or do overpowered formations just stay overpowered even though there's two people controlling?
I think it is, especially for the 5-4-1, that's a common formation in the 2-versus-2 scene, because it's easier to defend and it's a bit harder to attack in 2v2 unless you got some tactics and you're pretty good on the player locks and activating a lot of runs and understanding when you need to slow it down and when you need to up the tempo. So the 5-4-1 is probably one of the more common formations. But you also see a lot of 4-3-2-1s. I'd say the biggest difference is you see in the 1v1 scene, you see 4-4-2, for example. Nicola and Anders also plays these formations. You don't really see that in 2v2. So the 2v2 is more conservative in the way of playing, at least that's how I view it. I see way more goals being scored from corner kicks, etc. So that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, just to step back actually to talking about depth and offside trap, it's something I wanted to speak about again because I've noticed the significant difference really between being over 71 depth and that auto offside trap and not being. But of course, some tactics out there will have 71 depth and probably not really explain what that means and that you are going to get this auto offside trap. And that can dramatically change really how you defend. And also, I guess if you aren't playing over 71 depth, then it can be that your opponent essentially is able to force your defense back and open up space in front of you. And that can potentially be quite dangerous. Would you recommend if you are playing under 71 depth that you get into using the offside trap?
Depends on the level you're playing at. I think one of the things we also have to take into consideration is where are your strengths? Where are your weaknesses? Personally, I like to use the auto offside trap because it pushes my players more forward. I'm pretty weak in defending in my own box. So in order to not invite the pressure, I use the auto offside trap. But in case you're pretty good at defending in your own box and you're pretty comfortable with the jockeying and you don't really panic, you stay calm and composed, then I don't really think it's a must-have, the 71 depth. On the other hand, I'd say if you play on a higher competitive level, you must at least be able to recognize when you have to do the offside trap manually.
For what it's worth, Ben, I played almost the entire year on like 62 depth or something like that.
Yeah, I think it does change the defensive behavior quite a lot. So if you stick to something, you'll get used to it and it'll be fine. But we actually had a question about offside trap, which is why I wanted to come back to it. Flint Ren was saying, when are the best non-obvious times to use offside trap? For example, is it using it when your opponent gets the ball from you on the edge of their box to keep your defense on the halfway line and pin them back? Yep, is that something you would recommend people do? You know, like using it to bring your defensive line up the pitch? Or are there any particular uses that you would suggest people try for offside trap?
I'd say the best way to use it is when the opponent has his back turned towards you, so he's pointing towards his own goal, which means that he can't go for the through ball. Mm. Once you do it with a high defensive line and you're already kind of high up and your defensive line is quite a far away from your own goal, that's where it's really risky, and one mistimed offside trap will just eventually lead to a counterattack and a goal. So I'd recommend you doing it in places where you need to get away from your own goal, push up a bit, apply some pressure, trying to give the opponent less time, but also you need to make sure that the opponent can't just do a quick counterattack and go for a left the through ball, or for that matter, the first time through balls, because then you're in trouble.
And would you basically do it whenever they're facing the wrong way to play a through ball? Like, is there any disadvantage to doing it, I guess?
Well, I guess you can kind of compare it with everything else in the game. Like, if you do it every single time, eventually your opponent is going to realize and recognize you're about to do the offside trap. So from there, he probably, if he's a smart player, he'll do something else and he'll probably pretend that he's going to have his back towards you and trying to protect the ball. But then he suddenly switches up real quick and then goes for the through ball. So you have to use it with caution, and you have to also be aware that the frequency of it isn't too high, because then you just really give away that now I'm going to pressure you, and then it's pretty easy. Also, I think it does signal to the opponent that I'm pretty impatient. I want to win the ball back right now. And whenever you realize that as an opponent, that your opponent will try to win the ball right away, then what I'd do is just keep the ball a bit more, wait for him to eventually screw up the offside trap, because if you do it a lot of times during the game, then eventually one of them is going to screw up.
Nice. Yeah, very good advice. And Josh, do you use the offside trap much at all? I'm not sure you've spoken about it on the pod, but...
I'll use it sometimes to kind of get pressure higher up the pitch, but not to try and catch somebody offside. It's one of those things where whenever somebody uses it against me, and I'm and kind of, you know, reflecting Jeppe's point there, the fact that you've seen them do it once, you're then kind of expecting it again. The best players don't use it all the time, the people that will comfortably beat me, but good players that get used to doing the same thing, sometimes that might be like player locking, or in this case, offside trapping. Eventually you can kind of time it and expect it, trigger a run, you know, especially if you're on the counter and they're pushed up quite high, you can still have the player in your own half and they'll push up to the halfway line when they offside trap, and you've got so much space to just put something over the top and have somebody fast chase it. But it's not something I've actively used. Weirdly, the thing that I notice the most when I'm defending is my width rather than my depth. I tend to like to bring my width tighter, usually like down into like the 30s, because I really dislike the feeling of having a spread out defense and there being lots of gaps between them. I much prefer it, especially when defending in like a five back, to feel a lot more compact. And something that I've never even thought about before is having a higher defensive line allows you to defend not inside your box, which is something I'm terribly panicky at. Whenever somebody's in my box and just smashing that right stick as hard as they possibly can, like it can be a little bit intimidating sometimes. Sometimes I've got it. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I kind of, you know, I'll just back off here. I'll be okay. But actually, it's something I'm definitely going to at least experiment with now in the kind of last few months of the game. Might be something that I bring into next year.
Yeah, and it's important to state that there isn't a huge punishment for doing that, because some people rightly think that depth impacts how high your team or defensive line will be when you've got the ball, but it doesn't affect that at all. Everyone has the same depth when they're on the ball. It's just the depth at which your team engages in the defensive phase. So that's important to note. And actually, Josh, before we take a break and then get into talking about mentality, I think you had a good anecdote as a starting point for this.
I used to play PES quite a lot, and I ended up playing in a competition at the Emirates in London, and got to the semi-final, and the guy I was playing, I was better than. I could feel it in the game. I just knew I was better than him. I conceded two quick goals in like the 25th minute, and I panicked. And I changed my setup from the fullback I was playing to a three-back to get more attacking. And by the 60th minute, the game was over, because he just caught me on like three counterattacks, and it was, I think it was 5-1 or 5-2 at the time. And it wasn't going to happen. He was playing way too passively for me to score that many goals. At what point in a game, both in the pro scene and I assume it would be the same like in a normal match just for somebody playing foot champs, would you say, okay, this is the point at which if you've got an attacking strategy or a more attacking strategy, you should switch into this? Because I see a lot of people do it early on in the first half, especially going like constant pressure after like 25 minutes and then are gassed out at 60 minutes. They may have got back into the game, but are then at a massive disadvantage. Like, when would you say is the time to switch tactics, if at all?
That's a really, really good question. Give you a couple of examples. I'd say if you're a better player than the opponent and it's just playing casually, then I'd probably wait a bit. So if you go down by 1-0, let's give it 15 minutes. I probably wouldn't panic too much. But if it keeps putting pressure onto you, you may be lucky to not concede, then I would cue a pause at maybe 20, 25 maybe. Not necessarily I'd change anything, but I'd just pause it to have a look at his formation. That's one thing I always do when I do cue a pause, or the opponent does. And also in the halftime, I have a look at the formation of the opponent. Even if I'm like 99% sure that he's playing this formation, I still want to make sure that there's no surprise incoming. And that just gives a certain belief that you got this under control and you know what's going on. There's nothing worse than the opponent switching the formation and it's too late to do something about it. So it's about trying to look it from the outside and trying to also follow your intuition. I guess it's like watching a football game, and you kind of can view it from the outside and you can clearly tell, is this an even match or is this starting to to get in the hand of one of the teams? Is there a flow or momentum going here that they need to keep and the opponent needs to break that and take a pause or make a substitution like they do in real life, for example?
Nice. I might have actually won a seat at the Emirates in a box if I'd have had that advice at the time.
Well, yeah, we'll let Josh think about what might have been for a bit while we take a break and be back to talk more about mentality in just a second. Hello, listeners. Allow me a little bit of a ramble here because we're heading towards what is FIFA's end game. I mean, not just the end game for FIFA 23, but FIFA entirely. So if you have any thoughts on potentially different topics we could cover over the summer, especially because it's the end of FIFA as we know it, then, you know, please do send in any questions you might have, any topics you want covering, maybe ideas for guests you would like to come on the podcast for a discussion too. Always definitely open to any suggestions listeners might have, and you can send those in via all the usual ways, footweekly@mail.com and @footweeklypodcast on Twitter. @footweeklyben is my Twitter, and you can do the little Q&A thing on Spotify, comment on YouTube, really any way that's easiest for you to get in touch with any topics, any guests, anything along those lines. And look forward to seeing those. And if you would like more Foot Weekly content, including past Foot Weekly content, we've got some specials from previous summers, which are still very much relevant. That connection episode went down really well. People have improved their gameplay experience massively because of that. So do check those out. And you can go to support Foot Weekly. Just search that in Google and it'll take you to Patreon, where you can sign up for just £3 a month. You'll be supporting the podcast, keeping it going. And if you do consider doing that, then that is greatly appreciated. And let's jump in to the rest of this podcast.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome back after the break. So we talked about mentality before, but not with someone, I guess, as specialist to some extent, or at least I think, on this as Jeppe. And I guess we've all experienced the mental challenges of foot, of FIFA. What would you say, if you were to distill it down, is the fundamental thing to think about when trying to improve mentality?
You really have to focus on what you can control. That's one of the main things. You need to acknowledge that the way you feel when you're playing the game is not necessarily the reality. So I guess we all experienced at some point playing the game and we feel quite robbed and we feel like it's unfair that we conceded certain goals. So a normal player who doesn't really care too much about mentality would probably try to, or at least start to, blame the game, whereas a competitive top-tier pro player would never really do that. They'd either say, okay, I can't really do anything about it, and then let's just accept it, or they'll try to view it from a different angle and see what can they really change. So being a mentally strong player is all about being able to handle obstacles, also keeping your motivation high. I think personally that motivation is also a thing you are able to create for yourself, and being able to focus on the right things, realizing what do you need to change, and also being aware that the way you think isn't going to stop you. And the better you get at having such strategies to bring your own mind back into the game, the better mentally you're going to be. So one thing I'd like to do with my players, at least in one versus one, is I allow them to play the game or whatever they want to whenever the ball is out of play. So let's say there's a throw in at this moment of time, there's nothing going on. So now they can really get some relief. They can get their what they have on their mind, get that out of the head so they can start to focus again. And then once the ball is in play, I don't really want to hear much, because the more they speak, the less concentrated they get. So let's say they spend 5 seconds complaining about the game, or they are thinking about the past chance that they missed. Then they have 5 seconds less to think about the next step. And we all know how important it is in competitive FIFA to stay aware and just think one step ahead. And if you're already behind there because you couldn't focus and you couldn't move on, then you're in trouble.
So what you're saying is actually you say to people, when the ball's out of play, take a moment to release any frustration and then get your focus back.
Yeah, at least that's how I approach it. I think there's different ways to do it. But I just found that there's no point in trying to convince yourself that you're not mad. Or I guess a lot of players can kind of relate to the feeling of trying to convince yourself that, okay, I'm not mad and I'm not nervous when they're playing at a tournament, but then you have a look at their hands and they're all shaking. So there's no point in telling yourself I'm not nervous if my hand's shaking. It's pretty obvious I'm nervous. On the other hand, that's not really a hindrance. Of course, it can make it more difficult to perform, but that's only when you start to focus on the fact that you're being nervous, and now you move your focus away from the actual task that you're going to do. So this is a temporary strategy during the game where I can allow the player to focus solely on what's going on in the game while not spending too much energy on his mind. And then once we get to the halftime, we can talk it through. Or if I can sense that my player is out of focus for a longer period of time, I suggest him to take a break and a pause during the game and then just relax a bit here, try to focus on his breathing, try to just really calm down and look for solutions. Because the thing about the brain, and I'm not really sure how science-based this is, but at least that's what I've understood, that once you're looking for solutions, you cannot really worry. And I think most of the mentality issues on the top-tier level, and also for casual for that matter, is that they're worrying and trying to predict what's going to happen in the future. So let's say they go down by a goal in the third minute of the first game in Foot Champs. Now suddenly you're going to start thinking, oh my God, this is going to be one of the worst weekend leagues. Oh, it's happening again and all that stuff. And the more you do that, the more you are not really able to stay in the present. So it's about finding strategies to focus back and refocus, essentially.
I don't usually say this, but I just want to cut in. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
Like, as from a mentality perspective, like so many things that I recognize in my own game as all of the things you were saying you tell your players not to do.
I think what it like sort of echoes in some ways, like the last part. There's like a famous, I think Mike Tyson said it, and it's everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like oftentimes with FIFA, I feel like you have the best laid plans and everything feels, you know, you can analyze it all. And as you know, somebody scores that early goal that you're talking about and it feels like a punch in the mouth, and you either have to get your mind right real fast or you're going to get punched in the mouth over and over and over and over again at that level.
Exactly. It's easier said than done. That was what I was trying to say. Because in reality, it is really, really tough to get back. And it's kind of easy for me to sit here on the podcast and tell people to just relax while I acknowledge that. Sometimes it also happens for me, but that I get frustrated. But the thing is that it doesn't really matter how frustrated you get, I guess. What matters is how does it affect your game and how does it affect your mental health and your focus in the present moment. So I'm okay with a player reacting differently. And I think also for the pro players, that some players get kind of fuel from facing obstacles or feeling unfairly treated by the game. So you also have to recognize, is this a benefit for the player or not? And then there's always a balance, because once you cross that balance where the player starts to lose his focus, then it's no longer beneficial that he's fueled up and just wants a kind of revenge or whatever you can say here. So yeah, it's hard to do. It's easier said than done. But in reality, it's just about knowing yourself, knowing your limitations, knowing how you react. And I guess we can all relate to maybe not smashing controllers, but at least just shouting at the game. And then in the moment, it feels pretty good because you get your feelings out and you don't really have to worry. It's kind of relief. But then let's go 5 minutes after that and you're starting to feel guilty. You're going to have to buy a new controller, or you're going to have to, if you're kind of young, you have to go and apologize for your mom because you shouted to her.
Yeah, and if you're older, you got to apologize to your wife.
Yeah, exactly.
What I think is fascinating a little bit about this too is as I've certainly gotten older, you realize like you're gonna lose games of FIFA. Like it's gonna happen. For me, I find myself thinking more like, if I lose, like what's the worst that happens?
Yeah.
How is this going to impact me, like outside of the 15, 20 minutes I spend playing this game? And the answer is like, it has absolutely no impact for me in my position, like on the outside world. When I was, you know, a streamer, I put a lot of pressure on myself to play a certain way and to win games. Mm. And when I would lose or not play well, I would take away from FIFA with me into the real world. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, my wife shouldn't have to deal with me being grumpy because of a game of FIFA. Like, that's outrageous. And so I got that in check. I think with FIFA, though, mentality-wise, and I've talked about this before, that I do struggle with. So perhaps it's worth talking about here, is this idea of quicksand. The idea is, like, you know, you step in quicksand and if you don't fight and struggle and slowly pull yourself out of it, you should be fine. But like most people, when the body and the mind's natural inclination is to start fighting and struggling. And the more that you try to fight and struggle to get out, oftentimes the deeper of a hole you get yourself into. And the way that translates to FIFA is you give up a silly goal early. And rather than saying there's like 85 minutes left in the match, I'm going to play my game. I believe that I can win. I have a strategy, and I believe that strategy is going to lead me to score at least 2 or 3 goals in this match. I'll play solid defense and it'll be fine. You start playing riskier passes to get back in. Your decision-making changes. You start getting more aggressive defensively and diving into tackles. And slowly you start struggling and thrashing around, and you end up digging yourself a bigger hole because your decision making has changed without even realizing it. Now you're down 2 goals and the struggle's more. And so rather than trying to play simply out of the back and hold possession, you try to rush it out of the back and you give up another easy counter and you're down 3. And all of a sudden, it's like this game got away from me against a player that I know I can compete with and should be fine, but I've struggled and changed like how I approach it. And so I think that's something that I think we can all relate to, that sort of feeling of having to get back in it. And I think that is the ultimate test of whether or not you can reset and stick to your plan. And it's something that I know multiple times each weekend league, I have to go to like war mentally with.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And actually we've discussed the various symptoms, I suppose, of mentality challenges and the things that we might encounter. But in terms of solutions, yeah, but you did touch on it a bit. But for players who are listening to this podcast who maybe want to improve their mentality in champs, and I know maybe this time of the cycle, people are wanting to just mess around and have fun, and that's totally fine. But this is advice that they can take it to the next game. It's something that they could give a try now if they wanted to. But what would you recommend people do to counter those feelings, like that quicksand concept Japes is talking about, or maybe feeling very under pressure or getting frustrated with the game? Is there something that you would recommend people do in matches just to, I guess, refocus, and how would you do that?
One of the biggest things that influences the way you think about FIFA and the way you handle not really playing well is when the ego gets hurt. Like, you start to compare yourself to your opponent, and maybe you're down 1-0, but you've been playing better, or you try to convince yourself that you're so much better than the player. There's two ways you can do this. You can even have positive approach to it, where you were trying to lift yourself up and play better, or you can have the opposite, where you start to think, okay, I should have been up here. I'm so much better than him. All he does is this, or all he does is that. Then you're removing focus from what you really can influence. So one specific advice I have, which really helped myself a lot and also a lot of my players, is trying to move yourself out of the situation. And what I mean by that is, let's say you make a mistake and you give it the pass right away to the opponent. Then instead of saying that, oh my God, I'm so bad at passing, then replace that and say that was a bad pass. So now you're looking solely at the action and the situation and not really dragging yourself into that. Once you start to put yourself into the situation and trying to kind of deal with, is this my fault or is this the game fault? Then you're just removing your focus from the actual game. And now realize you're out of focus, and then you focus on that you're out of focus. Although that sounds a bit complex, but yeah, the point is really you're getting away from what really matters. So try to just look at it objectively, at least as much as possible. Try to look at the situations, the actions, and evaluate, was this a good goal or not, rather than did the opponent score, did he deserve it, all the stuff that it's pretty easy to drag into it. Try to look at the actions just for what it is and nothing else.
I think one of the things that you touched on, which I definitely think is a massive issue with a lot of people's mentality, is that thing of blaming the game instead of looking at the mistake you may have made in the build-up. Yeah, that final tackle you made may have been a good tackle and it's bounced back to them and you've got unlucky, but there might have been something that happened, you know, a few phases before in the play that you could have done better on, or you might have picked the wrong defender, or you could have done something a little bit quicker. And I think that the biggest thing I get watching pros is that you'd very rarely hear them blame the game. And if they do, it's a momentary, that was bullshit. And then they're back into it. They're back into like focusing. And I definitely see it in players that are very good players. I mean, my employer is a really decent FIFA player, but mentally just collapses. And like, it's that like blaming the game, because I feel it myself sometimes. You start then every single thing that goes against you, that's not where I aimed that pass. I've made that tackle. How's he got away with that? How is his player able to? He's only got 80 passing. How's he made that pass? Like, you can get, and it's that quicksand thing of like thrashing around and going like, everything's against me, when actually it's not. And if you just took yourself out of it, if you reviewed it, and very often it happens because you're playing against a guy that's probably a little bit better than you. And you know, he's just able to do things a little bit quicker. Yeah.
And I think also it's a matter of perspective. Let's say we play a game and I hit the post twice. So either you could look at this way, I hit the post twice and then I score from a rebound. So is that lucky or unlucky? You'd probably argue that it was unlucky for you and that I didn't deserve the goal. But I'd probably look at it the other way, that I hit the post and it should probably have gone in the first place. So that's a way of viewing it also. And I think, whether it's luck or unluck, it plays a certain part, and it probably also plays a bigger part than I'd like to admit, if I'm being honest. But that's also just a thing that's out of your control, and luck happens, and it's a part of the game. But you also got to be able to recognize when is this actually about luck, and whether this is just a matter of trying to remove the responsibility of not playing well.
Yeah,
I find that I do this thing sometimes with games that like helps me mentally in that sense. And I think if a professional like announcing team was analyzing or talking about this match, what would they say? Like, how would they describe it? And if I hit the post a bunch of times and then I score on a rebound, I think to myself, like, they might have said the goal has been coming, right? But if I hit the post like one or two times, I think to myself, they might say that was a half chance. Maybe would have been fortunate to score if he'd done this or that, or could have gone in. But, you know, at the most elite level, you have to convert those chances, right? Or you have to figure out how to do that. But they're not, the announcing team, I think in my head, wouldn't be like unlucky not to go in, but like it happens.
Mm.
So I think it's really hard to, as players though, to remove ourselves to like that big picture type level. And oftentimes when I've watched matches back and I take that approach of like analyzing it as like a match, you know, like a match commentator might, I'd be like, yeah, I did not deserve to be in that match. the way I was in that match. That guy was unfortunate not to be like 3-0 up early, because those were high quality, you know, XG, high quality expected chances there. Mm. Sometimes it's like the exact opposite. And at halftime, I find that I do it when I'm having a really, really tough match. And I'm fighting the urge to make changes to what I'm doing. And I take a look at the stats and I look at the breakdown and I'm like, I just need to continue on.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to talk about actually, when we have a bit more time, what are the things we look at to determine that? Because I agree, looking at the stats can often be very helpful rather than using your own mental state or the scoreline to determine whether to make changes. And I've actually found, although it gets a lot of criticism, the addition of XG has been really helpful for me in determining whether I need to make changes. And often in a game where I think, well, I'm not doing too bad, this guy just got lucky, I'll look at the XG and actually I hardly have any good XG shots and my opponent did have a few, and I would then change something where in the past I haven't. And I think that almost is an inverse of what a lot of people think, where they're like, oh, you shouldn't really make changes, it's probably not a good idea. Actually, sometimes those stats can show that you should make changes. And I've had games where I probably would have done worse in that second half and ended up definitely losing the game. But because I was preemptive about it, actually didn't. So it's worth thinking about that, actually, I would say. Anyway, potentially something for the future. Just to wrap up here, Jeppe, we've talked more generally about advice around mentality. But in terms of real specifics, people talk about the value of taking a pause and that being helpful. But I'm guessing just stewing for 40 seconds isn't necessarily going to help you. So are there specific recommendations you would have for people that they could actually take into games?
It depends whether I'm in the right state of mind. Like if I'm being nervous at a competition, for example, then I'll grab a bottle of water, try to drink a bit from that. Just trying to focus on my breathing technique, trying to calm my body down. If it's just a normal champions game where I don't get nervous and I just want to get back into the game, then I'm thinking in solutions. So I have and this maybe sounds a bit nerdy, but I found it really helpful. I have a couple of questions noted down that I've used with my clients. So I'll just go quickly through them. And the more I do it, the easier it gets and the quicker I can do it. So the first one is I have a question where it says, do I play too narrow? Do I play with enough width? So that's one thing. And then I have, do I play too fast? Do I play too slow? Is it perfect? Do I use enough skill moves? Do I use too much? So, and then it goes, the list goes on. So I have maybe 5 points or something where I quickly go through them and then I'm thinking in solutions. So it's easy to get back into the focus. And I believe when I'm out of focus, focusing on a solution will immediately, at least personally, get me back into focus. So I'm really, again, trying to get myself, look at the situation for what it is and not really having myself involved too much, but I'm looking at solutions and trying to fix the problem or trying to get back on track. And then one thing also I maybe haven't mentioned now is when you want to be a better FIFA player, what you should do in general is trying to focus on what you can do rather than what you can't do. So, the human brain is a weird thing, and it doesn't know the difference between what you can and can't do. So it doesn't know the difference between reality and what's just imagination. So when I say to myself, when I play a game and I tell myself, okay, you can't lose the ball here, what is going to happen? I'm going to think about not losing the ball instead of, okay, I need to keep possession. So whenever I give myself feedback, whenever I give my students, clients feedback, it's never what they should avoid. I do it occasionally, but that's by mistake. I really try to focus on what they can do, what they should do, rather than what they should avoid. Because once I tell them what they shouldn't do, then they focus on it.
Yeah, that is fantastic advice. And that point about being in the present, I think, is something that can applies to lots of things, not just FIFA. Incredibly fascinating discussion and very much appreciate you coming on. Where can people catch you if they want more from you?
They can go to Twitter. That's where I post normally. I also do have an Instagram account that I'm starting to post a bit more on in the future. Mm-hmm. So both are just Hojfeldt9. So that's Hojfeldt9. So I guess if you search for that, you'll find me some way.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you very much again.
Thank you for having me on.
And to Josh as well. It's been great to have you on this podcast. Appreciate you gracing us with your presence, even after such a week.
Yes, no, it was great to be here. And one of the more fascinating podcasts to just really sit and listen to most of the time. It was was great. Yeah. But yes, hope you all have a good week.
Indeed. And thank you very much to Japes as well. It's been a fascinating one.
Cheers, Ben. Pleasure. I enjoy chats like this, especially at this point during the cycle, because there are benefits that can be taken on to future games or other games or life in general. So don't miss tuning into the Foot Weekly podcast ever.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because it isn't too long until we start getting EAFC 24 news. Very exciting. If you have any questions, discussion topics, potential special episodes we should do over the summer, then send that topic, question, whatever it is, in via the various different ways you can do that. And of course, do subscribe via the various podcast platforms. If you're catching this on YouTube, definitely subscribe there. Leave a like and drop a comment. We're not far off 1,000 subscribers. Just started posting on YouTube this cycle, so it's great to see that grow. And of course, if you'd like to support the podcast, keep it going, get double the podcast content every single week for just £3 a month, then you can do so over on Patreon. Just search Support for Weekly. If you are a current supporter, then a huge thank you for keeping the podcast going. And a big thank you too to those Icon patrons. Dave B, Hugh J, Coach Vass, DJ FIFA Player, Alan G, Alistair, Anthony R, Dominic P, Rob P, Jeff B, Stephen F, Tom B, Damon H, David S, Nick Jack M, Eric T, Neil P, Adam G, Dan W, Waterman, N Hagman, Harry A, Jake G, Roger D, Springford, Elec, Bracco, Nishant, Harry P, Alex M, Lee A, Brendan W, Andrew C, Joe W, Timothy J, Dylan, J Kel, Ibis24, Adam R, Sam K, Graham W, Andy, Ads H2K, and Brian V.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Plus a special thanks to Luke M, Dave B, Hugh J, Tom M, Darren W, and Pato Foot for advice and production assistance. Before I leave you, just one more thing to add, though. FIFA's a bit like life, really. It has its many ups and its many downs. If you're having a few more downs than ups in real life in these more difficult times, then please don't feel that you're alone or need to struggle on without taking action. If you go to thecalmzone.net, there's loads of resources, advice, support, or even just a friendly chat for anyone who needs it. If it sounds like it could help you, then head over to thecalmzone.net. And for now, have a good one, and I'll catch you on the next podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.